Occupy Wall Street was inspired by the Arab Spring. Occupy LA and the other people around the country have been inspired by Occupy Wall Street. And now every village, hamlet, every place around the world is watching what we're doing here today, what we're doing out around the country, and how we're going to take this back. This is a day, 99 versus 1. This land is your land. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me a golden valley. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York.
Hello, everyone. This is KPFK Interim Program Director Alan Minsky. At the beginning of this year, I hosted a series of shows that I called Building a Powerful Left in the United States. The idea to do the series was actually sparked by an article by Chris Hedges about Ralph Nader, in which Nader said 2011 was the year for progressives in the country to get it together and put forward a powerful critique of society that truly addressed the causes of the current economic crisis, proposed sound solutions, and began building a powerful movement. Nader argued now was the time, because in 2012, the dynamic of everything being sucked into the electoral-political realm, a vortex that Nader knows all too much about, would take effect, and the opportunity would be lost for progressives to articulate, and then disseminate, a vision for a more just society. I was very happy with the series that was produced at the time, as well as the five shows that were added on later from the Left Forum in New York City. There was a great amount of insight, I believe, that was generated by the many participants in the series. But lingering over the whole enterprise was this sense, wow, the left has great ideas as to how to reorganize the society to create the justice we seek, but where's the movement? Spring turned into summer, and summer was just about to turn into fall, and then, suddenly it seemed from out of nowhere, perhaps the most powerful and potentially transformative social movement of our time burst onto the scene. We're now 45, 46 days past September 17th, and this movement keeps growing in leaps and bounds that had you told all the people who participated in that previous series as recently as September 15th that this was about to take place, they probably would have told you you're crazy. Well, fortunately, we're not crazy, and fortunately, we are now living in very exciting times. Over the next week, I hope to produce a second sort of annex to the series, Building a Powerful Left in the United States, and maybe this set of shows should be called Building a Powerful Movement in the United States. In it, we're going to be hearing voices from people who are participating directly in the movement, as well as from people who are putting forward ideas that are animating the movement as people are beginning to seek strategies and tactics to change this world for the better. To begin the series, I want to provide some of my own reflections on the movement, and particularly around the issue of what are, or what may be, the demands of this movement. This question has somewhat haunted the movement since its inception. The movement, as you probably know, was sparked by a call from the magazine Adbusters. What you may not know is that Adbusters actually put forward a proposal that on September 17th, people would meet and hold a general assembly at which the people present would determine the one demand that the movement would put forward. This, combined with the mainstream media's confusion over, quote, well, what do they want and what do they stand for, has created pressure on the movement to artificially hurry and state a set of demands. Over the weeks that followed from September 17th, this never really took place. A declaration did come out of the New York General Assembly, but it was a long list of society's ills, and the assembly's consensed upon objection to them, but was very far from Adbuster's request for one demand. And then Occupy Wall Street produced another solidarity document, but again, was not clarifying demands. In any effort to create consensus around a particular public policy proposal that could be put in front of politicians has been resisted. And so over the last month, the mainstream media has continued to clamor, well, what do they stand for? What are their demands? Well, let me tell you that from my point of view, the demands of the Occupy movement are perfectly clear. They are distribute wealth more equitably, create real democracy, and of course, end the reign of Wall Street. I followed the movement very closely since even before September 17th. and to me there's nothing mysterious about what the movement wants and how it intends to achieve it. The first two demands are inherent in the primary slogan of the movement. We are the 99%. What does this signify in terms of demands? It's obvious to anyone with half a brain. One, that wealth needs to be more evenly distributed in society, not primarily accruing to the richest 1%. And two, political power must be held by every person equally, which means that money must be removed from American politics, ending the domination of the political process by the 1%, and even more poignantly, the movement inherently is proposing that people participate in real direct democracy, as is practiced at the General Assemblies. The third demand comes from the other definitional term that has been with us since the start of the movement, Occupy Wall Street. So what's that demand? Again, it's simple. Finance capital's domination of the economy must come to an end. Financial institutions must return to being institutions that responsibly allocate resources for the development of projects, not a self-serving industry that controls society's wealth in order to make outrageous profits for itself with a callous lack of concern for the welfare of others. Looking out at the movement from where I sit here at KPFK, that strikes me as the three clear demands that the movement is making. Now, these demands are not public policy proposals. They're much, much more general. So why not call them ends or goals? It's simple. Because this is a movement that is in the streets, and by being in the streets, demanding that these changes take place, promising not to go away until these are achieved. So the stakes are high, since these are demands for serious social reorganization. They reflect a broad awareness across the movement that this is a society that has gone off the tracks and no longer serves the general citizenry. It also, in my opinion, reflects a tacit awareness that there needs to be now a serious exchange of ideas about how to transform society, and that the best way to achieve that exchange of ideas is through real democratic participation and dialogue. And that is what I hope to facilitate in this week's series. Up next, the dialogue with students involved in the Occupy Colleges movement.
As I was walking, I saw a sign there, and that sign said, no trespassing. But on the other side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water, this land was made for you and me.
This is Alan Minsky, and welcome back to a Pacifica Radio and KPFK special on the Occupy movement. I'm joined now by two students and one recent student from Southern California, two of whom I met yesterday when I was at Occupy Los Angeles, and I stumbled into the students' Occupy Los Angeles meeting, and they are Moses Dalton. Moses, welcome to KPFK.
Thank you, Alan.
And Guido Gergenti, welcome to KPFK.
Great to be here.
And the third person joining us is Natalia Abrams. She is actually a recent graduate from UCLA, but she is one of the national organizers of Occupy Colleges. Welcome to KPFK, Natalia.
Great. Thank you for having us.
So I want to start out by asking people how they heard about the movement and why they were motivated to join in and become active members in the Occupy movement. And let's start with Moses.
All right. I first heard about the Occupy movement through the social media outlet, Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
My Facebook friends were updating and uploading all of the images from across the nation, from Occupy New York, Occupy Wall Street. And the movement, to me, it reminded me in a certain way of the 1960s. And so for me, it was kind of natural to follow it as it grew. And finally, at my community college at GCC, I met a young lady, Sarah, who started the Occupy LA club on GCC. And when I met her, it was at the library. I was walking up the library, and there she was. She was organizing, talking about the movement. And since I had already been informed about it, I approached her and I said, hey, do you need any help? We put up a banner, and at GCC, our first meeting, we had 90 people attend. And so it was overwhelming success for our first meeting. I decided to help with fundraising because we plan on growing the Occupy movement at GCC, and we hope to set up a tent downtown in L.A. and really have the student body of GCC be a part of this whole movement. And so that's how I myself got familiarized with the work that a lot of people have already been doing with the Occupy movement.
And Moses Dalton is a student at Glendale City College, which, of course, is GCC, right here in Glendale, California, not far from the KPFK studios. Guido Gergenti is a student at Occidental College, where one Barry Obama once attended. And Guido Gergenti, how'd you learn about the movement, and what motivated you to get involved?
Well, just like Moses, it was on Facebook. There was an event, and I'm originally from New York City, so I actually had some resentment that I was out in Southern California and not down at Wall Street where my family was. I heard that there were these planning meetings happening at Pershing Square, and I went to one on a Thursday night, and there were a bunch of organizers planning how they were going to do the occupation, who's going to be a liaison to the city, and I was really excited. I had heard great things from New York. That was right after 700 people had been arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge. And there was this growing feeling among young people, especially young people who had thrown tons of support behind Barack Obama, only to have, you know, more years of recession, more student loan debt, no job opportunities after graduation, that finally there was some growing counterweight to the amount of corporate power in our democracy. And the next week I spent the night, Friday night at Occupy, slept on the sidewalk, woke up with a sore back, but was really excited. And the next week, without even doing anything, two other students had set up a tent on the quad and started holding general assemblies on Occidental College, kind of just like Moses said, outside the library. And from that, we had the idea that we needed to expand. We wanted to create a cross-campus network. We wanted to build this student movement, get the power of young people really behind this. And from there, it started growing into these mass assemblies. And I think all of us, I mean, we come at it from different angles. All of us really share, you know, somewhat, or what used to be a sense of despair that things are really bad, that we face economic and ecological crises that are really severe, but now this new sense of power and a sense of agency that there really is finally an opportunity to restore democracy, and so we're not going away.
Thank you, Guido. And Natalia Abrams, you were off campus, so how did you hear about the movement, and how did you get involved in the rather unique niche that you're involved in?
Well, I was on my way home driving cross country from Detroit, actually, when they maced a few girls in New York City. I heard rumblings about it. I had known that they were gathering in New York City, but the moment that I heard that, I've been protesting for over 10 years since the beginning of the wars in Afghanistan, and I have never seen such acts of police brutality. And I felt like we had transformed back to the 60s and the way the police were treating people. And that really sparked my interest. I went home. All I did was read about it, and then that Sunday night I noticed that New York was organizing a statewide walkout for students, and I thought that needed to be taken to the national level. So a few of us got together that we had met at Occupy LA and some people from past activism and started Occupy Colleges, and within 3 days we had over 1,000 followers, and we organized 5,000 to 10,000 people that have walked out in the last 2 weeks, or the last 3 weeks, and now we're doing a teach-in coming this week.
So let's stick with Occupy Colleges for a second, and then we'll get back to the guys here. So Occupy Colleges is occupycolleges.org. What's the level of participation? What are the reach in terms of how many college campuses you're reaching? And then third point, I understand you have some good news in terms of endorsements.
Yes. So we, like I said, we started 3.5 weeks ago. We now have over 5,000 followers on Facebook, over 4,000 followers on Twitter. We've had 150 colleges for each event. We have for the walkout and for the protest, and now we have 50 colleges signed up for the teach-in, and we expect a lot more this coming week. Usually there's a lot of sign-ups the week of. And we recently just got endorsed by the AFL-CIO Student Group, which is the largest labor organization in the United States, so that was a very big endorsement. Through the AFL-CIO, they've hooked us up with fantastic progressive student organizations such as the Roosevelt Institute, the United States Student Association, the USSA, Campus Progress, and a lot of the leaders of those organizations have agreed to help us promote our teach-in, because it's kind of what I love about this movement is it's bringing all of these independent progressive groups together for a single cause. And I think that's what happened in the 60s during civil rights, and that's what's starting to happen again, is that we realize that we need to put our own smaller individual issues to the side right now and fight together as a whole, because collectively we can get so much more done than factioned off into our own independent group.
Okay, great. That's what Natalia's involved in. And so I met you both, besides the activities at Glendale City College and at Occidental College, at a meetings of Students Occupy Los Angeles. So maybe Moses first, and tell people what Students Occupy Los Angeles is.
This Saturday was my first experience of Students Occupy Los Angeles. And from my first experience, I was impressed. I was thoroughly impressed.
Likewise.
My only experience of any student groups that were organized in a similar fashion, the March 4th committees. So if you can remember, March 4th, 2009,
right.
2009,
yeah.
There was a big student movement downtown LA, tons of students. It was awesome. I had the experience of meeting some of the people, some of the students who had organized that particular movement. Just in comparing the two, I kind of feel like it's organic, it's highly organized, it's awesome. I'm inspired. It's completely inspirational. And that's pretty much as much I can say about it. I'm new. It's new to me. I've never seen leadership from our generation get together and express themselves so clearly.
I do have to say, and then I'll throw the same question to Guido's, I sort of stumbled into this meeting, and it was a meeting with dialogue that was just, I don't know how to phrase it, at the highest level that I've encountered so far, as high as any level that I've encountered. The ideas that were animating the people who were speaking, their understanding of society and where things are at this historical moment was very profound. Guido?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think Students Occupy LA comes out of a shared feeling among students, just like Natalia said, that we need to come together. To an extent, it was based off what happened in Boston. 10 area mm-hmm. colleges in Boston marched through downtown together, and they had a website, Students Occupy Boston. And we saw that, and we said, that's powerful. We need to do this. So Occupy Occidental Group started saying, we want to organize a cross-campus network. We ran into Natalia. She was doing national networking. And out of that, we said, let's do Students Occupy LA. Let's make it an official committee of Occupy Los Angeles, and let's start holding these mass meetings. In terms of what the group is, we really only came to consensus about three kind of general things. One is that we want to centralize and build this student movement. Two is that we want to help start general assemblies on campuses everywhere so that more students like Moses and myself can get involved right in their campuses. And three is that we have an unwavering commitment to nonviolent action as a means of creating change. Besides that, you know, we don't have demands. We don't have a specific policy agenda. I think we all share values of justice, share values of equity, share a vision of a more participatory democracy. But we've only had our second meeting, and it's already moved quickly, and we're really excited where it's going to go.
Yeah, my understanding is that, like Occupy Los Angeles, one thing they did do from the General Assembly was consent upon the document that was sent out from Occupy Wall Street back about 3 weeks ago. And is that something that Occupy Los Angeles is also, is just de facto that that's understood? So it's a part of this Occupy movement that sparked from Occupy Wall Street, or is that even unstated?
Yeah, I think that there is a general unspoken consensus that the Declaration of the Occupation of New York City is right now, along with the Principles of Solidarity, mm-hmm. kind of the guiding document. Although we do have a committee within Students Occupy LA working on a statement of solidarity from students of LA County to Occupy Wall Street. So forthcoming in a few weeks will be a new statement in addition to that larger declaration saying, you know, we adopt such and such principles, we adopt this declaration, and here's our statement of solidarity.
Do you have any way of tipping on where that's headed, that conversation? Or,
I mean, I think you'll see a mix of economic injustices that students are feeling hit by. You might see some stuff about student loan debt and unemployment, but I think you'll also see stuff that's much more far-reaching than just one policy change. I think you'll see an articulation of a vision for society that's more just, that's more sustainable, that's more accessible to a larger amount of people.
And I want to go to Moses in a second, but I want to flash over to Natalia after saying, though, I'm Alan Minsky. This is KPFK Radio. I'm speaking with Moses Dalton from Glendale City College, Guido Girgenti from Occidental College, and Natalia Abrams from the website Occupy Colleges, from the Occupy Colleges movement. Natalia, the same question that I asked maybe a question or two ago to Guido, which is, again, Occupy Colleges, it's animated by basically understanding that the declaration from New York, the points of solidarity are what what Occupy College stands for, or is there a more specific declaration that's been made, or nothing yet?
Well, we're a little different than like the students for Occupy LA or students that Occupy Boston, because we're not in a real position to hold general assemblies in the same way, since we're pretty much a virtual movement. So we label ourselves as a solidarity movement to Occupy Wall Street to the top. So even this declaration that you're talking about, it is kind of in itself organic, and it's moving and changing all the time. But whatever Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street is endorsing, we are in solidarity with that. And one of the main things that actually helped us form Occupy Colleges came from that declaration, which was that they said that students, they have held students hostage with tens of thousands of dollars of debt on education, which is itself a human right. And that is what I felt really spoke to students, that as students we have mounting debt and lack of opportunities after college, and that's why this really should resonate with us. But I guess I also want to make it clear that this is so much more than just student loans. So, yes, that's a reason that students are feeling the connection, but we have to come together for the big economic injustices than just ourselves, which would be just focusing on student loans.
Now, I have been sort of holding in my back pocket this question, which in many respects is for Moses in particular, which is the state of the public university and college system here in California, and in particular the astronomical escalation in fees that has taken place over the past few years. What that means for you personally, how you think maybe students who are mobilizing in this movement are going to be addressing that.
Okay. Well, generally speaking, it's just like Natalia has mentioned, there's a much bigger crisis. It's a crisis of democracy, but it's more of a crisis that a lot of our students, a lot of our policymakers that represent our students, they're not necessarily being heard. And so our administrators are being forced to do more with less and less resources. So how it manifests itself at places like Glendale Community College, our school is, its emphasis is transfer. We're a two-three-year transfer school. So most of the students that attend our university, their goal is to go on to a four-year university. What's happening is there's tools and resources, financial aid resources that the students have, things like, for instance, the Ball waiver, the Ball grant, and the Pell grant, things like that. And those things cover your cost at a community college. But with the fact that we have a debt crisis, just like you said, the fees are increasing. And so the problem is with the students, a lot of students don't know what to do about it. A lot of administrators have no idea what to do about it. It's just a crisis. It's an ongoing crisis. But now it seems like we have an opportunity to pull together the leading thinkers of our generation and really come to some type of idea on how we can begin to use these issues to address bigger issues. This is the like underpinning issues, which are the real issues behind the rise in tuition that we face at some place like GCC.
You know, one of the situations as impressive as this movement has been, and the growth of the movement across in terms of the number of cities has been spectacular. In Denver, Colorado yesterday, 2,000 people marching again in a situation where there was a very high likelihood that tear gas would fly, and apparently it did.
Yep.
But when you're at Glendale CC, have you been able to speak to what would still invariably amount to the silent majority, to steal a phrase from Richard Nixon, the silent majority of students, do you sense that they are looking at this movement as a way to maybe break the ice and achieve something that they're sort of all hoping for, which is that the tuition fees can be contained or maybe in some better future return to a free university system in California? Is there that sentiment, or are most people not really engaging the movement yet? And if they aren't, are you sensing, though, that maybe they're sympathetic to it?
At Glendale Community College, I'm the president of the Black Student Union, the BSU. It's an institution that's pretty new. There hasn't been a BSU at GCC for about a decade, but it's becoming more diverse. And so with the students that I interact with at my campus, I find oftentimes, you'd be surprised, our generation is becoming politicized. And with the Occupy LA movement, the thing that I think is more profound about it is that it's able to organically capture the imagination of people. And so a lot of people that you wouldn't think you wouldn't think that some students were attached to this movement, mm-hmm. but a lot of people are. They're watching. A lot of people have a lot of questions about a lot of different things that's happened in our lifetime as a generation,
mm-hmm.
and they're on the peripherals, just sitting and watching things develop, because we all have our dreams. We live in America where the idea is you can dream here, but we all see the crisis of democracy. And I think right now, I mean, to answer your question, the general sentiment on college campuses, if GCC is indicative of what that general sentiment may be, is one of anticipation. We can all feel something is moving, some profound inspirational power is moving through the population, and it's manifesting itself in different ways, which none of us as a movement can really explain. You know, maybe we'll get some wonderful poets, some wonderful thinkers, right. some wonderful musicians that are able to captivate what this movement really is. But no, it's an anticipation. Everybody's waiting to see. People know that the system can't go on much longer the way it is, and something has to give. Mm-hmm. And that's the sentiment from the more thinking people on my campus.
And it's interesting because I definitely wanted to throw that to Moses because. And Guido is, you know, not a member of the 1%, but he is attending a private school, one where there hasn't historically been any anticipation that it would be, say, free university or very, very cheap university or college fees for the student body. So how do you think that general body of students at Occidental look at this movement right now? And are you sensing solidarity? You know, some of the stuff that's spun off from USC that you can find on the web is actually what looks like some sort of like frat boyish disdain. Not that that's common at USC. I don't know. I just did see that on the web. So what's it like at Occidental?
I think at Occidental that the silent majority is supportive and that there is a general sense of solidarity. Absolutely, at Occidental there are people who are very excited to make a lot of money after college, who want to work on Wall Street and are not sympathetic. And, you know, that's a fight that you fight when you go to a private university and they're, you know, the economics department is somewhat conservative. But I think that there is a lot of solidarity coming from middle class students because these are the students who have in their mind somewhat a sense of entitlement that I did everything right and I deserve a job when I graduate. And suddenly, you know, you're doing everything right and you're not getting a job. You have student loan debt. Everything isn't as easy as it used to be. And that's going to create solidarity with working class communities and communities of color who have been dealing with these issues for a long, long, long time, right? Mm-hmm. There's a recession now for most Americans, but there's been a recession in working class communities and communities of color perpetually, right?
Right.
So there's a lot of solidarity, I think, now coming from middle class students, including myself, as we're seeing this shared interest, there's that we have a common interest in a better democracy, in a more just economy. And I think the silent majority will come around when the movement really heats up and there become more obvious ways about how to get involved.
And Moses?
I was just going to say there's also a necessity for movements like ours, just speaking personally, for that organic movement to become something that represents that silent majority, to have the type of leadership emerge from it that can captivate the desires of the population and maybe even inspire desires that they don't even know they have about what a more just economy and democracy may look like.
Right.
Natalia, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to say, well, what is our option? You know, I think Guido really touched on it at the beginning of our conversation by saying that in a way Obama actually kind of galvanized this interest by saying that, you know, yes, we can and hope you can believe in. And then just because he didn't come through with what he said he was going to do doesn't mean that all of the people that he galvanized aren't going to take it forward. And I think now we've realized that we can't wait for somebody else to do it. We need to do it ourselves. And there really isn't any alternative. I mean, if we keep going in the way we're going, you look at income ratios in 1928 or 29 to now, it's the exact same thing where the top 1% are getting the full share of everything. And we saw what happened. We had a depression for 10 years. So if we don't change things now, if we don't actually be the change that we want to be, then we're going to have – it's just going to get worse. So we might as well try something. And I think that's really what's galvanizing a lot of people is that the time is now. and people are starting to take hold of that, and the silent majority is slowly becoming a vocal majority.
I suppose the thing to do now is simply go around with final thoughts, and maybe let's start with Guido.
Yeah, I think Natalia is absolutely right. Young people didn't forget the Democratic promise that was that election of 2008. And young people didn't forget the promise of a post-racial society and a more democratic society. And that didn't happen. It didn't happen. Racism is still affecting our peers of color and communities of color. And our democracy is still serving the interests of corporations more than it's serving the interests of the 99%. And young people didn't forget that what was supposed to happen was we were supposed to get more equity and more justice. So now, just as Natalia said, you know, it said, you know, we are the ones we've been waiting for. This has changed that we can believe in, but not from one man or one president, from our generation, from this movement. And as you mentioned, it's not just going to be student loan debt, and it's not just going to be unemployment after graduation. Those are going to be the issues that are most affecting students. That's going to galvanize solidarity between middle-class private university students and working-class community college students or working-class students who only have a high school diploma. But what's going to take the movement, you know, beyond just those issues is this belief that we really can build a more democratic society, that the America we live in right now is not the best United States that's possible, and we can build a better one. We just need the right people to have power and use it, you know, for social justice.
And who's up next for final thoughts? Is it Natalia or Moses?
I'll take it just to build on what Guido was saying a bit, which is it's not just our generation, and that's what we actually hope to access with the teach-in that we're having on November 2nd and 3rd, is to ask the people that haven't stopped fighting the fight for over 40 years, our professors and our community members, about what they think as well, because we've been out there for over 45 days now. And now I think it's a great time to start talking with the great thinkers and leaders of our communities, just like they did in Tahrir Square and all over the Arab world during Arab Spring, and bring our great thinkers together to start to come up with real solutions that we can really look forward to for next year, which is election year.
And Natalia, since we're rounding things out here again, remind people about OccupyColleges.org and any way that you think people maybe should get in touch with you from college campuses or the general public.
So you can sign your school up at OccupyColleges.org for the teach-in. You can email us at OccupyColleges@gmail.com. You can friend us on Facebook at Occupy Colleges or on Twitter at Occupy Colleges. It's pretty self-explanatory and easy, and we'd love as much support as you can. If you can't get out there to do the teach-in, get out there and protest, walk out, show something for solidarity, especially on November 2nd, which is being called the Global Day of Action, in support of Scott Olson, the Marine who was brutally injured by the police officers last week in Oakland.
Hey, thank you so much, Natalia. And
thank you.
And hold on there for a sec still, and then Moses.
I am so excited to be a part of this discussion. I think it's historical. I think it's awesome. Natalia, you mentioned Detroit. I'm from Detroit. I think that there is a silent majority, I would like to call them, that have been utterly forgotten about, similar to like the forgotten men and women that Franklin Roosevelt mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I think that we really have a chance as a nation to reflect on some of the lost promises, not only of this past 2008 election, but some of the lost promises of our democracy, and really reflect on where we are as a nation, especially in places like Detroit, Baltimore, Gary, Indiana, and where we could be if we were to really address some of those promises in a real thorough manner.
I suppose I have one final thing, which is, first of all, for you guys, give out the contact information or however it is that people maybe would be involved with Students Occupy Los Angeles.
So you can email studentsoccupyla@gmail.com, studentsoccupyla@gmail.com. If you want to get involved with our mass assemblies, or you can just find us on Facebook and, you know, post on the Facebook page, hey, I want to start a general assembly, when are mass assemblies happening, and we'll get you connected.
And then the final question to all of you, just information for the folks in Southern California, maybe Natalia should take a stab at this first. Which colleges are representing and which ones aren't? So which ones are we going to shout out to right now to get involved, Natalia? Are we seeing broad representation from all colleges?
Occidental is involved, California State Long Beach, California State Bakersfield, UC Santa Barbara, but we'd love to see UCLA, USC, We need more of those groups that attend Student Occupy to also be participating in Occupy College's events and all solidarity events going around in the country.
And so then let me throw it to the guys from Students Occupy Los Angeles, sort of final question. Let's say someone's sitting in their car, they're part of that silent majority, they even attend USC, they attend UCLA. Your message with them about how exciting it is to be involved and to invite them to be involved.
If you've been sitting on the sidelines of the movement and, you know, you're a young person, this is the time to stake our place in history. I think Natalia put it really well. There are our parents and our professors have been fighting this fight for 40 years or more, and we owe it to our predecessors to continue this struggle for more justice in America, to continue this struggle to expand the democratic promise to more communities in America. And the movement is really hot right now. We have a lot of power, and we need to run with that. So start a General Assembly on your campus. Come to City Hall and attend the mass meetings. Join the solidarity teach-ins. Look out for a mass student march in early December. And stay connected over winter break, because spring semester it's going to get even hotter and it's going to get even bigger.
And again, the next meeting of Students Occupy Los Angeles is Saturday at 12:30 at the north side of City Hall.
Absolutely.
I want to thank you, Guido Girgenti, for joining us from Occidental College. I want to thank you, Moses Dalton, for joining us from Glendale City College.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you.
And I want to thank you, Natalia Abrams, for joining us from Occupy Colleges.
Great. Thank you so much.
And now we're going to shift gears a little bit, folks. And we're going to hear from Michael Moore from when he was recently at Occupy Oakland. Now, this was from a dialogue with Anderson Cooper. But let me explain this, folks. I'm not just running material from a rival news organization. I do believe it is newsworthy when Michael Moore says what you are about to hear on CNN. Because when these words are being spoken on one of the most powerful, corporate-owned media outlets in the world, the times, they are a-changing. Here's Michael Moore in dialogue with Anderson Cooper from Occupy Oakland.
The reason we're not occupying Congress or D.C. right now is because the congressmen and the senators are the employees of Wall Street. They work for Wall Street. They're funded by Wall Street, and they do the bidding of Wall Street and K Street, which is the lobbying arm of Wall Street. So we're kind of tired of going and dealing with the middleman or the servant. We'd rather go to the big house and take it there, because that's really where the problem is. It is with capitalism. It is with corporate America. Capitalism right now, and it's important to define a word in its present form, just like you wouldn't define the word marriage as a woman has to get permission from her father in order to marry. But that was the definition 100 or 200 years ago. So let's not use the old definition. When we say capitalism, we're talking about 2011. 2011 capitalism is an evil system set up to benefit the few at the expense of the many. That's what's happened, and that's what people are tired of, and which is too bad for the capitalists, because I think a lot of people, perhaps in this crowd, probably used to support the old style of capitalism.
So what system do you want?
They've completely lost them. There's no system right now that exists. We're going to create that system. This movement in the next year or two or few years is going to create a democratic economic system. That's the most important thing. Whatever we come up with, it has to have at its core, the American people are going to be the ones controlling this economy. We're going to have the say, in how this economy is run. That say cannot happen by the people in the penthouse offices on Wall Street. That is over. That is over. We've declared it over. Now it's just a matter of time until we actually make this happen, when we bring democracy, true democracy, to this country. We're no longer settling for, you know, oh, we live in a democracy because I can vote for a politician. Uh-uh. No. No. True democracy means I also have a say in my future, and I have a say in how this economy is run. And you're not going to use me and abuse me like this. I mean, how many people, you know, we talk about the people who have lost their jobs. How about the people who still have jobs? You know what their job is now? Like, if you're working on an assembly line in Flint or Detroit, you're not doing the job of one or two or three. I'm sorry, one person is doing the job of two or three people. They've killed the other ones off, and now everyone's got to work harder, longer hours for less pay, less benefits. The damage that this has done to people, to their physical lives, to their mental lives, to their families, I just think there's so much carnage as a result of capitalism, 2011 capitalism, that they overplayed their hand, and now the people are going to come up with a better system that's going to be run by the people.